You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Sharpen your pencils and get your notebooks out. It's time for the Star Seminar. And now, here are your hosts, Rabble Rouser and Danny Phantom.
Welcome, diligent students, to another edition of the Star Seminar. For those of you who were not enrolled in our fall class, I do want to stress that there is a prerequisite for this class here in the spring semester, and that is that you have taken the fall class, which is, of course, titled The Cowboys 2022 Season. If you did not take it, however, you can fill out a special petition to be a participant in this semester's class. It is going to require that you write a 10,000-word essay on what was good and what was bad about the 2022 season. Reading your essays will be not only myself, but also my podcast partner, the great Dr. Danny Phantom. How are you today, sir?
I'm doing well, except the only thing is I think I might be in the doghouse.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's really weird, too, how this came about, too. I was just sitting here minding my own business, you know, doing some work at my desk, and my wife was watching a Lifetime movie, as she often likes to do. She's a big fan of those, and I don't know what was going on in the movie, but apparently these girls were talking about how great this guy was, you know, in the movie, and all I heard from her was, like, I can't even get my husband to put his dishes in the sink, and, you know, I heard her, but I didn't acknowledge her. It's like, okay, what's going on there? And I just kind of mind my own business. But then she muttered something, and the water splashed on her. And then finally, I'm like, you realize in the movie that guy's going to try to kill her later, right? And nonetheless, we got into a little argument about me not putting my dishes in the sink. And Rabs, and I got to tell you, she's absolutely right. I don't, but there's a perfectly good reason for it. It's usually when I go to the sink, there's like a bunch of stuff there. She's got coffee cups, a colander, some weird, she's taking apart the Keurig and cleaning, I don't know. But it's always filled. So what I do is I spray some water on top of my plate and I just set it on the counter, right? So it's soaking, you know. To me, that's a sensible thing. But what happens end up later is she'll wander in there, apparently wanders in the kitchen like a banshee and starts grabbing stuff. And then next thing you know, she's got like lasagna water all over her. And of course, you know, who's going to hear about that? So my wife just absolutely hates it when I soak my dishes, put water on it, and set it there because she's always just grabbing it and making a big mess. But I don't know. It's a weird thing. I guess it's something that I do that drives her crazy. But is there anything that you do that drives your wife crazy?
Well, it's funny because you reached out to me before we started to record and told me that you were wanting to talk about this. And so I went to the source. I asked my wife, what is it about me that drives you crazy?
No.
she thought about it for a second. She said, you leave the kitchen cupboards open. And it's something we've been going back and forth about for a while. We actually have these self-closing cupboards now where we are. But there's one that's next to the sink that doesn't close. And she claims I leave it open all the time. Oh. I dispute this particular interpretation. I accuse my wife of taking a single incident and extrapolating over a long period of time. But I also, you know, will admit that I am guilty as charged. I do that. I like to leave the cupboards open when I'm putting away all the dishes. And sometimes I forget, but so be it. You know, I'm not cheating or abusing or in any kind of substances. So, you know, I mean, I think a little bit of a dirty dish every now and again or an open cupboard is probably a small price to pay for having to live with a man because we, of course, are all at root Neanderthals.
I will say, Rabs, that was pretty brave of you to actually just go and say, All right, what do you got?
Well, I mean, the truth of the matter is we get along great, and there's almost nothing about each other that bothers the other one much. So it's, she does a couple of things, I do a couple of things. They're really small and inconsequential, and so, you know, it's not a big deal. But I tell you what is a big deal, and that is today's show.
All right, nice.
So we're starting our new semester. We're starting our off season. We have a lot of really interesting things to talk about. We're going to start by talking about the offense this week, the defense next week, and then the following week we want to talk about the Cowboys front office. But before we get into today's discussion, I do have a question for you, my good man.
Mm-hmm.
Since we're going to get into the offense today, I was wondering, in your Cowboys watching time, who are the offensive players who, in your mind, have been underrated, underappreciated, who deserve a little love? Because I think that, for me, the Cowboys, and particularly Cowboys offensive players, tend to be generally overrated or highly rated.
Mm-hmm.
It's really hard for a Cowboys player to fly under the radar. But I think a couple guys may have. So, we've both been watching for a long time. Who would you say have been guys who have managed to fly under the radar, even though they're Cowboys?
Yeah, Raps. When I got your question in the email yesterday, I'll admit I've changed my mind two times since. So I have a few, but I'll tell you my one, and then if you don't mention the other guys, then we'll swing back around. But I end up landing on Mark Tooney.
Oh man, that's my guy.
Is it your guy? Oh my goodness. Okay, well that's fine. You know what? Well, yeah. I'll why don't you just kick us off with Tooney then, and then
No. I mean, I think Tooney is a great pick. Tooney is a great pick. I think that there's another guy that I want to talk about, and I think that Tooney and he share something very similar, which is not even that they're the weakest player on a good line, because I don't think Tooney was a weak player. I think he was just like the quietest dude. He was just a kind of guy who went about his business. But that left side of the Cowboys offensive line in those years with Tooney and Newton, a couple of road graders. And I think if you want anything else, if you want, a distilled essence of Tooney's resume, look at what he did against Bruce Smith in those two back-to-back Super Bowls, where he was matched up against Bruce Smith, the greatest or one of the two great pass rushers of his generation, oftentimes one-on-one, and just took him out of the game both times.
Yeah.
Was really just magnificent, hardworking guy, a no-name guy, drafted as a defensive tackle, worked his way into the offense, and, as an offensive player, and then was a multi-time Pro Bowler and really unsung guy. Anything you want to add about Tui?
No, I mean you nailed a lot of them. And the one thing that's really kind of did it for me with Tooney, and you're absolutely right. He started off, asked to help out, defensively. He's playing some on defense, and then even within season, he's switching over and playing on the other side. And it's pretty amazing. That's just something that you don't see anymore. But I think, if you look at that great wall of Dallas, and you think about all the players, we all know about Nate Newton and stuff. And there's a good list of really good players there. And playing left tackle, I mean, that's the most important spot. And when you are protecting Troy Aikman's blind side, and that's huge. And he did a couple Pro Bowl seasons. He was a very quiet guy, and he did not a lot of noise. You don't hear a lot about him, but certainly, a great player. And I think, when you're looking at being underrated, I think that's a guy for sure. But I want to go back one to where the guy that I had right before Tooney, and it's another guy that's, I just don't think gets enough love. And that is actually Tony Hill.
Oh, that's a good one.
And the reason it's so with Tony Hill, I mean, everyone makes a big deal of the 88. So we all know that there's so many greats that have wore 88. I don't need to list them. But Tony Hill, I mean, he was really one of the better overall Cowboy receivers. I mean, he's actually third in receiving yards behind Witten and Michael Irvin. So, I think, you look at him, he's... People that don't remember Tony Hill, he's a little Alvin Harper-ish in the sense that he's mm-hmm. a big playmaker. I mean, besides both of them wearing 80, that's, the easy thing to, but, he big deep threat, But he also did a really good job of, you know, adjusting to the ball. I just think with what if you're trying to imagine what Tony Hill is, think of Alvin Harper, but just think of more of him, just a more sustained Alvin Harper. Alvin Harper kind of had he was there for a little bit and then it just kind of fizzled. But Tony Hill, you know, he was a good 10-year player. And I also think that a lot of you know, he has a couple of Pro Bowls too, and but a lot of reason why he's underrated to me too is, like, unlike a lot of the other great Cowboy receivers, they had a great quarterback to go with him, and Tony Hill did at first, but quickly he ended up, you know, playing in the decline of the Landry years, and that's when, you know, we had the Danny White hoogaboom type thing. It was your quarterback play really suffered there, so he did a lot of his damage with some suspect quarterback play too. So Tony Hill was my honorable mention for, you know. So what's your other guy?
So it's funny that you mentioned him as a receiver who didn't quite get all the love he deserved, because actually I have one sort of honorable mention and then one other sort of runner up. My honorable mention is Patrick Creighton, as I think Patrick Creighton was actually a much better receiver than he got credit for. I do think that loss to the Giants in the in the divisional round of the playoffs in 2007 has tainted his legacy in unfortunate ways, because obviously there were two different times when he flat out dropped one, and I think another time he didn't see one. Either of those passes could have won the game for the Cowboys, and that's a shame, because there was a lot of other times he made really, really clutch plays. And then the other guy is the sort of Mark Tooney of the Romo era, and that's Doug Free. I think Doug Free, again, as the guy who was the kind of quietest dude on a line where everybody was, more kind of pedigreed or more, just kind of had higher draft status or was a little bit more of a flashy player or whatever. Doug Free was a really, really good player for a long time with the Cowboys, and people used to complain about him all the time in those years from like 2013 to 16. And I was like, I don't know what you're complaining about. This guy is, I mean, this guy's been a deluxe player. He really is. So those are my dudes. And I think the guys you named are just fantastic. But listen, let's transition and begin our discussion of the contemporary Dallas Cowboys as we close the book on 2022 and get ready to open the book on 2023.
All right. Well, so what I have in store for you today, Rabs, is I want us to actually do a little home improvement project. So I want you to get on your hard hat, and we're going to go through and we're going to play a game called Patch It Up. So how this works is I am going to throw out some projects. Maybe it's the offensive line, maybe it's the play calling. We'll see, you know, and I want you to, we're going to discuss how the Cowboys should proceed in repairing these groups. But I also want you, before you start to give your answer of how to fix it, I want you to give it a severity score. And the way we're going to do this is I want you to tell me what you would use to patch it up. So I got four pieces of equipment for you. You can either choose duct tape. You can choose a hammer. You can choose power tools, or if it's really bad, you can use a jackhammer. So, between those tools, let's kick things off. I want to start. Let's start with the guy everybody loves to talk about, everyone loves to criticize. Let's start at the quarterback position. And before you start trying to repair this, I just want to throw some things at you, just to let you know what we're dealing with. I know what you think of Dak Prescott, and you know what I think about him. But I wanted to. It's worth noting that, you know, he, including the playoffs, that he played in 14 games this season. He threw an interception in 11 of those games. That's 79%. He threw multiple interceptions in six of them. That's 43%. And then, but in the three games that he didn't have a pick, the Cowboys won by an average of 24 points. So we know when he's not turning the ball over, they're absolutely just killing it. So anyway, let's kick things off. How are you going to fix this problem? What are you going to use? Give us your choice of what are you going to use to patch this up?
I'm using duct tape. I mean, I don't think that we need to use a lot to repair Dak Prescott. I think that we're going to need to use some power tools in some other areas, or some jackhammers maybe in some other areas, that I think will help Dak Prescott. I think Dak's game will benefit from improvement at a lot of the other places. I think that if we're talking about the backup quarterback, then we may have to pull out something a little that you have to plug in. But right now, I think Dak and his interceptions are a byproduct of the people around him. And I think it's a byproduct of the kind of statistical anomaly and fluctuation of small samples. Like the reality is 16 games is a very small sample, even with, 60 offensive snaps a game, 30 or 40 pass snaps a game. Those are still, from statistical purposes, very, very small samples. And I think that that's what's happening with our dear friend Dak, and I think that it's very likely he'll rebound because that's the way that things average out. Historically, he's not been an interception prone quarterback.
Right.
I really do think that that was a byproduct of where he was this year. So let's move on, and I think we can talk about some of the things that will help Dak and show why we don't need to bring out the heavy tools to help him.
Okay, so let's move on then to the running back position. Now, as you know, the running game was pretty good early on. We saw some explosiveness from Tony Pollard, but then down the stretch, things got pretty bad. And, even Pollard was having some troubles, but Elliott himself, I mean, in each of the last, however long he's been in the league, he constantly is declining in his yards per carry. And then down the stretch this season, you're looking at an Elliott that was, for the last four games, was averaging 2 yards per carry over a four-game span. So the Cowboys had some problems running the ball. So now I want my question for you is, what are you using to fix this running game?
Well, that's interesting because I'm not sure exactly which tool is best here, but I think it's time to clean house. So if that means a jackhammer, maybe we're going to just drill the cement floor up and put in a new floor. Because I think that it's unlikely that it's possible that franchising Pollard will make sense, but it's unlikely that he'll be worth whatever second contract he can command on the open market because he is such an explosive player. It just doesn't make sense from a kind of economics perspective to throw that kind of money at that position. I know he's an explosive guy. I appreciate that. I love him. It's the Cowboys' fault for underutilizing him for much of his career. I do think that he had some durability issues durability concerns that they had about him that sort of helps to explain that. But also there wasn't just an over-reliance on Zeke because they were paying him a big contract and they had to justify that. It's time to get rid of Zeke. It's time to shift the way they think about the running back position. If you think about the assets they've spent on running back, a first rounder for Felix Jones. Before that, they had Julius Jones. They've spent a pretty high second rounder on him. They spent a third rounder on DeMarco Murray. I think what they really need to do is start thinking about how can we get more guys like Marion Barber, fourth round guys who can be very successful in the league. How can we throw a third day pick at someone to get a running back who we know can do perfectly well, has a pro skill set. I don't think the running back matters. I think the scheme and the offensive line matter. And yeah, there's some running backs who are going to get more yards than you've blocked. But the reality is, those guys are rare, and the majority of the yards they get are the yards that are blocked anyway. And so I think that, maybe we're duct taping it if we're just saying we're going to get rid of people. But I think that if we're talking about changing the running back room, let's bring out a jackhammer. Let's get rid of everybody and start from scratch. Yeah, we can give Malik Davis and give him a chance to compete for the second running back position, but they're going to need to get a free agent running back and they're going to need to spend a draft pick. I just don't want them to spend anything before a third rounder.
Yeah. I'm torn on this too. I think I'm a little bit in the sense of like how I misread the whole Elliott thing and how I fell into that trap and it's hurt the Cowboys now and now to where it's like you don't want to go down that road again. But at the same time, you just look at what Pollard brings. It seems like it would just be like some gross negligence to just let loose one of your few, explosive players that you do have on offense. And so I'm really torn on this topic, but I want to just quickly ask you, are we done with Zeke? Do you think the Cowboys just got to say, I know they're talking about maybe renegotiate, you know, just cutting his salary a little bit. But do you think we should just be done with Zeke?
I think so. I think it's also easy for us to say that because we are not in the locker room. I think the place, and this, we've talked about this before, I think the one thing that fans and other casuals, and we are casuals because we don't know what happens in the locker room day to day. The one thing that that us casual, even invested casuals as we are, that we don't understand or appreciate is what players bring from Monday to Saturday. Right, whether they're in there in the weight room getting guys fired up, whether they're you know, making guys practice harder, I mean, all practicing really hard and showing by example. And I think there's a lot of those things that Zeke brings where that he's a beloved member of the team. I think he brings a toughness to a team that's not particularly tough, and I think those things are valuable. But they've got to find ways beyond him because he's become a liability. I mean, it's, you know, he had a couple big runs earlier in the year. That were really great, but boy, every year, as you just said when you asked the question, every year he gets more worn down. He's even less effective at the beginning of the year. And I think this year he averaged something like 2.4, 2.5 yards per carry over the last like 6 weeks or something. It's just not going to cut it. It's not going to cut it. And especially, we're going to get to this, especially if you're struggling to pass block, you've got to have a running game. And if you can't, if you can't block consistently, then the way you have a running game is by scaring them because you got guys who can create explosives, which just brings us back to the Tony Pollard conundrum, right? Which is that if you can't block for people, you've got to have a running back who every once in a while will pop one. But I think that they've got to try to go about it a different way because that's not a way you can you make a living in the NFL.
Okay, so you got duct tape for the quarterback, and you got jackhammer for the running back position group. So, let's see what you have to tell me about the wide receiver spot. And as you know, the Cowboys had a lot of change at wide receiver, with Amari's gone. And the big question was, can CD handle the number one role? Which I think that's been answered. He looked fantastic. The crazier thing was what happened after that. And there were a lot of possibilities, but nothing really panned out for the Cowboys. Of course, Michael Gallup, he was coming off his knee injury, and he just never looked like himself. But none of the other options too just really were doing it. I think there was a lot of hope that somebody there, James Washington or the rookie Tolbert, would come along and do something. Simi Fehoko was looking like he was good in camp, and then Dennis Houston too, also. Everyone, there was so much buzz about him, But nothing. I mean, outside than the surprise play of Noah Brown, which comes with its own limitations, the Cowboys just didn't have very much to offer. Of course, they added T.Y. Hilton late. So my question for you is, how are you fixing this?
Well, if we had to use a jackhammer for the running back room, I don't think we have to be quite so severe with the wide receiver room, but that's only because they already have a number one receiver in place, right? So, unlike the situation going into 2018, for example, when they got rid of Dez but didn't have a number one receiver, it's not as dire. I mean, that was really bad. So the good thing is they have a guy who's probably going to be a sort of, top of the league guy for the next few years that they can build around. But they've got to get another one. And so, obviously, we're talking about the offense right now. The real big piece of news that's come out, of course, is that Kellen Moore is no longer going to be the offensive coordinator, and looks like Mike McCarthy is going to call plays, and the Cowboys are going to sort of edge toward, if not go wholesale into, a system that's a little bit more like his system in Green Bay. One of the things that a lot of people have been pointing out, and I think this is absolutely right on, and it's important to think about, is that his teams in Green Bay had a succession of receivers that they drafted. They always draft them in the second round, but there was like Jordy Nelson and Greg Jennings and Randall Cobb, and then of course Devontae Adams, and they just every other year or so they'd get one and they just put them in the pipeline. So they always had, like, when they were humming, Rodgers always had three quality receivers. So this means that if the Cowboys are going to be able to run that offense with any amount of success, then they're going to have to get two more receivers who are that level of quality. So my patch-up tool here is we're going to use power tools for this one.
All right.
And because I think we can build around, I think we can build around CeeDee Lamb, but there is some work to do. They have to get as many new receivers as they do new running backs. I think they're going to need to get two of each. And if that includes, a resuscitated Michael Gallup, then so be it. But I think they've got to kind of plan as if that's not going to happen. Either way, they're going to need at least one more really strong, a complimentary, like number two A, number one possibility type of guy, I think, to add to that room. And here's the other thing I think they need to add. In Michael Irvin, in T.O., in Dez Bryant, they had a succession of guys who were alphas, who were dogs, who willed teams to win, who willed themselves to be dominant physically. CeeDee Lamb is a deluxe receiver. That's not his game. They need a guy who can do that, who will break a tackle, who will intimidate a running back, who will dish out a hit to a safety that's bigger than the safety can dish out to him, who wins through physicality, intimidation, et cetera. And they haven't had that guy. And I think that hurts. And frankly, I think that's one of the main reasons they got rid of Amari Cooper. So Amari Cooper was soft. And he's a big guy. He could be a physical guy. He didn't choose to be a physical guy. And so I think that that guy opposite CeeDee Lamb needs to have some of that. Even if he's 5'10", I don't care if he's 5'10" and 205. If he hits like a truck and breaks tackles, that's what they need. This team didn't have anybody who broke tackles last year. They got no yards after catch.
Right, yes.
Well, yeah, and they were, if not at the bottom of the league, they were near the bottom of the league in breaking tackles. So they went down on contact. And boy, that makes it tough for everybody else involved. It makes it really hard on your quarterback.
The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SMASH. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SMASH, only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out.
Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries.
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on. And there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It's always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a two-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back. If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog, she's like knocking on the door going, everything okay in there? Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog.
Really, the only thing I want to ask you about this project that we're, trying to fix is how we're going to go about it. I mean, is this something that, are you going to Home Depot? Are you what are you going to do? Are you looking at free agency, or are you going to roll the dice again and think that you can, take a chance on a draft pick? Because we did, we had a third rounder last year that would just, couldn't get on the field. So that seems like a risky endeavor. So do Cowboys need to step it up and maybe spend some money in free agency?
They're gonna have to, because I think you can't just listen. Historically, wide receivers come into their own in the third year of their pro career. There's just too many things you have to learn. The pro game and the offensive schemes are too complicated for most guys who in college are winning because they're physically dominant, not because they're precise route runners, not because they can read the coverage on the fly or anything like that, right? And so look at CeeDee Lamb. It was year three, this last year, where he really came into his own. He had lots of flashes before. Dez Bryant, same thing. Beautiful, beautiful plays in the years one and two. So he ascended to that where he really understood the offense was a dominant player in year three. It happened. And Michael Irvin, same thing, but you know, injuries obviously played a pretty big role in delaying his arrival. It's just again and again in history, we see guys really blow up and emerge in their third year. And so it's foolhardy to think that you're going to be the exception to a pretty established rule like that, even if that's happening more often now because guys are being prepared for the pro game where the pro game is more like the college game. I think there's still so much to learn. And so you're going to have to get a guy like Odell Beckham or somebody like that. You're going to have to get that kind of guy. Oh, man, I'm not saying it has to be Odell Beckham. I'm not saying it has to be him. I'm just saying I think he's a guy you have to have on the list, but you need to get that kind of talent. Whether he still has that talent or not is something we can discuss over the long off season, my friend. But you have to get somebody like that opposite CeeDee Lamb, and I think you also have to invest in a draft pick on a guy who's got upward, who's got some athletic ability and some upside. Because if you're going to run McCarthy's offense successfully, you've got to have a guy in the pipeline all the time.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what they do. I mean, I really don't know. I think the Cowboys, they do a really good job of finding some good role-playing, low-cost players. I do think that they might need to maybe spend a little bit more receiver just to kind of give themselves, because there's some really quality, reliable guys that you could add to this offense that you wouldn't break the bank by any means. But, I'd be kind of curious to see what happens. But I want to move on to a project that, in my opinion, I don't know if it needs fixing or not, but based on how the offseason could play out, we could find ourselves with a big old hole in it. So I want to move into the tight end spot. And I think most of us would agree that the Cowboys got, a surprisingly great contribution from the tight end position. Blake Jarwin wasn't around, but it didn't matter because these rookies came along, Jake Ferguson and Peyton Hendershot, and they've played outstanding. They were a dynamic part of the offense, very, very involved in the blocking. And Schultz was allowed to be Schultz. He just did very Schultz-like things, very reliable pass catcher, good inline blocking too. I mean, the Cowboys, the Cowboys tight end group was surprisingly good, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. But that was last year, and with the uncertainty of Dalton Schultz, I kind of feel like maybe the youngsters might have kind of, played him out of Dallas to where now the Cowboys might be without him. So my question for you is, you're going to have to do a little kind of predicting here to assess what kind of problem you really have, but how are you fixing the tight ends?
I think I'm using duct tape, my friend.
All right.
And yeah, so here's what I'm doing. I'm letting Schultz walk, and I'm letting him walk because I think that we value Schultz because he's outplayed his draft position. He's outplayed his athletic profile. So we like him, right? The surprises from Schultz over the course of his career, ever since Blake Jarwin first went down, and we all said, oh no, there's nobody on the roster who can play tight end. It turns out that Schultz has ended up with a much better career than Jarwin. He's a much better all-around player. That said, he's very athletically limited. He doesn't threaten defenses. He doesn't threaten teams with athletic rangy secondaries. He tends to do well in the games that the Cowboys do well against lesser defenses. I think they need a weapon. And I think, frankly, both Ferguson and Hendershot seem more like weapons. They seem more like guys who can threaten down the seam. They seem more like guys who, the good offenses, what they want you to do is they want to make big guys cover, and they want to make small guys tackle. And one of the ways you do that is by getting them matched up with your tight ends. And I think that those guys threaten to provide mismatches that Schultz can't because of his athletic limitations. And so Schultz is one of those guys. He's a yeoman warrior who does not merit another contract on this team. Some team that has a lot of cap space and needs to build culture, fine. Let's bring Schultz in. He can help that team. That's not this team. And this team has too many weapons behind him. I think if they had any idea that Hendershot and Ferguson were going to be as good in their rookie years as they were, they might not have franchised Schultz anyway.
Yeah, no, I agree. Oh, Rabs, I'm a big Schultz fan, and I actually wanted the Cowboys to retain him. Of course, that's because we did not have Ferguson and Hendershot. Mm-hmm.
Right.
But I think what you said some really important things there. And as far as the type of player he is, which means to me, I really think that we could find some repeatability in a player like Jake Ferguson, because I think that I saw a lot of stuff that he could do. You know, with the right coaching, he could be that type of role playing. And if you are going to spend money, you're absolutely right. You want someone who offers some type of mismatch and has those athletic traits that can be a real difference maker. So I guess what I'm saying is you could probably find his supplement, what you got from him, at a lower cost, which is that, and that's where you would just not spend the money on a tight end. So no, I agree with you. I think you're good at choosing some good tools, but I'll tell you what, this one's not going to be so easy, because I don't know what to think about here. And I want to move along to, I know, an area that you have, you know, a lot of opinions about, but I want to talk about the Cowboys offensive line. And I'll tell you know, every year I have my own concerns, and then every year they end up, I see some pleasant surprises, but then at the same time, it's just still not where it needs to be. So, you know, the Cowboys, a lot of stuff happened. You know, we got, you know, a great draft pick with, Tyler Smith. Fantastic mm-hmm. pick. You know, we all knew that, right? Well, at least, you know.
Nobody was a bigger champion than you, my friend.
Yeah, we all, you know, whatever. We can all agree mm-hmm. now that he's a good player, and we're excited about having him in the future. Also, too, you know, it sounds like we're getting Tyron back. I mean, so we could have Terrence Steele back if he comes back from his injury. You got another year. Zach Martin's always fantastic. And, hey, guess what? You know, Tyler Biadasz is a Pro Bowler, and he's got one more year on his deal. So, overall, we're going to return a group that's pretty good, pretty good. And it could end up being the Cowboys get what they wanted to do this year, next year, by, you know, certain Tyler into left guard next to Tyron, you know, and then have everybody else, you know, play in their normal spots. But anyway, so I want you to tell me what you're thinking here on the offensive line. How are you fixing, how are you improving the Cowboys offensive line?
Oh boy, this is a tough one. I'm going to divide this into two. I'm going to put duct tape on the offensive line. On the personnel, but I think they need to jackhammer the coaching and scheme, because I think there's something that's not working there. So I'm really interested to see what Mike Solari can do. You know, I think the Cowboys, if you think about a lot of the players like Tyron Smith and Zach Martin, they had the really, really important moment early in their career where they had a chance to work with Bill Callahan. And actually, I'm not sure that Zach Martin ever did. Maybe one year he did in 2014, but I think there's so much of the teachings from the Bill Callahan era carried that offensive line through its strongest period. You know, from 2013 to 17, for example, and they just haven't had the same coaching since. And so, you know, one of the things you mentioned was there have been these moments of surprise on the offensive line, and then there's been disappointment. And the thing I think that's most frustrating is that the surprise and disappointment have essentially happened the same time during each season for the last 2 or 3 years, where we're suddenly like, oh, wow, this offensive line's a lot better than we thought. You know, we're saying that around like from game 6 to 10, and then we're like, and then maybe a guy gets injured or they fall off or something happens. And both years, the last couple of years, the offensive line is ended the season where they just haven't been able to block people, and the offense as a unit has really stagnated. So, I mean, I think when we think about offensive line in general, I want to take a jackhammer to it. At the same time, I look at the personnel and I think there's a lot here. I'm not sure what I would do. And I don't think the Cowboys can afford to invest a premium pick on another offensive lineman. Listen, if there's a great offensive tackle prospect who falls to their pick, I think they have to consider it strongly, because they're going to need to replace Tyron Smith.
Right.
And maybe Tulsa Smith, our friend, is the guy who's going to replace him eventually, in which case they don't need to do that. I mean, I think they're going to need to draft a guy somewhere to replace McGovern, you know, who can be a kind of depth piece, mm-hmm. or you know, find a mid to low price free agent who can offer that some flexibility as the interior swing. But this feels like an offensive line where there's a lot of talent, but they don't seem to be anything greater than the sum of their parts, and maybe even have trouble being the sum of their parts. And so for me, for this next year, my solution is duct tape the personnel and jackhammer the coaching and the scheme. And so hopefully Solari can offer us that.
Yeah, no, those are good answers. I think, I mean, it's hard not to be excited about the talent that the Cowboys have, certainly in the trenches, and as long as if you could count on Tyron being healthy, and that's the only thing, is suddenly if you can't, then you got a problem. I mean, sure, you can move Tyler out, but then now you've got a weakness at left guard. And so but definitely, you know, the Cowboys can find something draft that don't have to happen on the first couple days, even, and certainly not with the first couple rounds, and they can find, you know, maybe a future that it could come in. If they found a good guard, then maybe he could be your guard piece when Tyron leaves, and then Tyler pops out, and then the eventual piece that replaces Zach Martin. I mean, I don't know. So you never know. Mm-hmm. But so anyway, I want to move to our final improvement project, which we have to throw this one in there, especially with like the news you mentioned that the Cowboys have moved on from Kellen Moore. So now the Cowboys are going to have a new play caller, you know, and it sounds like it's going to be their head coach. So, I mean, we have our own different opinions about what we thought about this offense. Many of us, you know, saw a lot of good things in Kellen. You know, there's certainly, you know, one of the things I love too is I felt like, you know, he was able to do a lot of things from the same looks, and he really had defenses on their heels at times. And to me, I just really came down to how well the team was executing, in particular, how well their quarterback was executing. That to me is what moved the needle the most. I thought that the play calling himself was fantastic. So, but I'm asking you, you know, offense, we got our play calling situation. How are the Cowboys going to fix it? And what severity score would you give this? Well, what are you using to fix it?
That's a really hard one, because if Kellen was still here, I'd probably say duct tape. I would say, I mean, we're going to get into this more in a couple of weeks when we have a chance to talk about the front office and the relationship, I think, between the front office and the coaches. But it does feel like a lot of what's happening this offseason, and I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves, but it does feel like a lot of what's happening this offseason is the front office saying, hey, it's not about personnel, it's about coaching. And I'm not sure I agree. I know I said with the offensive line, want to duct tape that line, but I think that certainly with some of the other positions, the running back room, the wide receiver room, I mean, they do need to, the offensive line has to be better. And I think that Kellen was limited by the limitations of the team. I think that we've talked about many times, Kellen's offense is a collection of plays, and then there's advantages and disadvantages to that. The advantages are that you can pull out certain plays that work well against a certain scheme or against a certain personnel group on the opposing defense. But the problem then is that you don't have as high a capacity for deception and things like that that can really you know, make it easier, particularly for your receivers to find holes in underneath zones, for linebackers to overrun, you know, counter plays, things like that. And I think that the defenses that in this today's NFL that are most effective, the Shanahan offenses, the McVay offenses, they tend to have personnel groupings and plays that look the same, whether they're a run or a pass. And so as a defender, you don't know. And so there's always that moment of hesitation. And that moment of hesitation is all you need in today's NFL. And I'm not sure that Kellen and his scheme bought that for his offensive players. I think that there were a lot of things that saddled him and saddled his quarterback. And I believe that we will, in a year's time, look at this and go, wow, those guys did a really great job given the limitations they had. And so I think we're going to miss a lot about Kellen Moore. At the same time, I think that if the Cowboys offense, and it's not about the fact that he's not a good play caller for me, I think he's a fine play caller, and he's a really good offensive mind. If the Cowboys are going to move forward, I think they need something where the scheme is going to help the players more. Because I think that ultimately the limitations of the players put a cap on the scheme. And that is why they did really well against poor defenses and struggled against good defenses, because I think that the good defenses were able to shut down their players because the players had deficiencies. And the scheme was not built in a way where it could help players with deficiencies overcome them.
Yeah, I don't know. Obviously, we're hoping that the McCarthy influence is going to be, you know, what the Cowboys needed all along. You know, it's weird. We want Kellen to have some problems to where maybe there was some limitations on his ability, and maybe he's still growing. We hope that's the case. You know, we hope McCarthy comes in and does a good job with them. And of course, you know, he has had a lot of success in his early years in Green Bay. There's no doubt about that as a play caller. But you know, his most recent time has not been so favorable. But you know what? You don't know. It's a different situation. You know, he's going to have a different team, a different, you know, locker room, and just, you know, a bunch of different things. So, I mean, honestly, this is just one of those things that's going to be an unknown. But unfortunately, or fortunately, I guess, I think it's going to be one of those things that's really huge as far as the direction of where this team goes. I think you're either going to see, I don't think we're going to have another 12-5 year. I think it's going to go this way, or it's going to go up, you know, or we're just going to slowly sink. And then we're going to be looking for a new play caller again, you know, in the following season. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting. So I feel like whatever we use, we're just going to be holding it up temporarily just to kind of see it. Maybe that's all it needed. But then again, you know, maybe we'll see it come crashing down, and then we got a much bigger project, you know, the following year.
I'll tell you this. You know, it's very clear now that since they've cleaned house with the offensive staff, somebody was not happy with the offensive staff. I mean, it's very clear that now it's coming out that Kellen wanted to leave. It's not that he got fired. He actually wanted to leave, and they were like, okay, we're not going to stop you. You know, we could say no because you're still, you know, under contract as a lateral move, but they weren't happy with him. Stephen Jones was open with reporters that there was some, you know, philosophical differences between the guys. And it seems like what we're starting to hear is that became a wedge that between them increasingly over the course of the time they were working together, the 3 years that they were both here. So McCarthy's on his own now, dude. His offensive staff is gone. It's all on him. What I hope this will result in is him being a strong advocate for a significant infusion of talent, because the reality is this offense is slow. They have receivers that can't get open. They have an offensive line that for the most part cannot pass block. And toward the end of the season, couldn't run block. And we'll talk about this more again in a couple of weeks, but let's just close this out. Let me ask you a question. Mm-hmm. If you're an offensive coordinator and your offensive line can't pass block, is like bottom of the barrel pass blocking, what do you do? I mean, like, what are you supposed to do scheme-wise? What's your solution?
Yeah, well, you better have a lot of plays where you're getting the ball out of your hands quickly. And, you know, you're going to definitely have to, you know, you're gonna have to get the running game to work for sure. So it definitely limits in really what you can do.
So let me follow up then. So let's say you have receivers who can't separate quickly off the top at the top of the route, or maybe, you know, the beginning of the route. Then what do you do?
Well, then it becomes even a bigger problem.
So let's say another thing. Your quarterback's one of the top, let's say, 7 or 8 in the league, and your backup is extremely athletically limited, although he's a bright guy. So what you realize that your chances of winning with your starting quarterback are significantly higher. So you have to protect him for the whole year. Then what do you do?
Yeah, I mean, I hear what you're saying. I just don't know if I have the same set of ground rules that you're throwing out there, because I feel like there were times where the offensive line was fine within pass protection. I mean, wasn't great, no, but it was fine. And there was plays that, you know, to be made. And there were plays that were made, and the Cowboys at times were fantastic. I mean, we saw it. So to me, that's why I feel like maybe parts of them were adequate enough. And then, you know, the part that you're depending on the most maybe just wasn't. And to me, that's what it's going to come down to. I think that the Cowboys, I don't see a huge shakeup. I don't, as far as the talent. I don't think they're going to be going and making a bunch of big decisions. I really think, you know, the fact that Prescott's going to play better is going to be the biggest thing that's going to make this offense better, because Dak, we know Dak's a good quarterback, and we've, you know, even parts of last season, he was just phenomenal. So I think we're going to see an improved Prescott, and I think that is, and I do think they're going to fix some. I mean, I think the receiver group's going to be stronger, and I think there is a lot of aspects on this offense that are going to be improved, even if it's just slightly. So really, as long as McCarthy's drawing up the right plays, then I feel like the Cowboys are in good shape. So, but it'll be interesting to see. You know, we'll have to see what the Cowboys do this offseason, and you know, to fix this offense. And you know, next week we're going to be, you know, turning this around, and we're going to try to troubleshoot the defense and try to figure out what the Cowboys need to do, you know, to improve on defense. Maybe it's not as involved as what they need to do on the offensive side, but that is all we have for our show today. If you haven't yet, please do subscribe to the Blogging Boys Podcast Network. Leave us a rating, write a review wherever you get your podcast, Apple, Spotify, iTunes, or Stitcher. Tell us what you think, anything you would like us to do differently to improve your podcast listening experience. And if you ever want to talk to us about anything at all, any off-season moves that you want to see happen, or, you know, what do you do that drives your significant other crazy? Yep, let us know. Hit us up on Twitter. I'm at DannyPhantom24, and Rabs is at Rabble Rouser, spelled RabbleRouser. And don't forget to check out all the great podcasts throughout the entire week. Every day we got something new for you. Tomorrow we'll have the World's Team with Meg Murray and Paul Stewart, so make sure to check that out. But that's all we have for today. Thanks for hanging out with us. Hope you have a great weekend. Stay safe, stay happy, stay true to the silver and blue, and we will catch you later.
Last dismissed.